The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I'm just back a few days ago from teaching a two-week retreat, and sometimes the themes from that can infiltrate the talks that I give, and to some extent that's part of what's happening here, because towards the end of the retreat I began exploring the ways in which the practice, the basic simple practice of being aware, of noticing what's happening, not only cultivates ability to start allowing the difficulties and to allow there to be a kind of a transformation around difficulties, but also cultivates these beautiful qualities of mind, of love, of compassion, of joy. And so that kind of blend or interweaving between how the simple practice of just being aware actually cultivates love, I wanted to bring that in, because we don't often speak as directly about that when we're talking about mindfulness practice. We do talk about it when we talk about cultivating loving kindness practice. There are specific meditation practices or exercises that cultivate these qualities of mind more directly, where we aim our mind in the direction of inclining towards feeling connected with people, feeling compassion for people. And so there's some specific meditation practices along those lines, and the Buddha taught those. There's definitely a kind of a thread of mindfulness practices and concentration practices, and then there's this thread of the loving kindness practices, the Brahmavihara practices. There's four basic qualities that are kind of woven together as wholesome qualities of mind, and these include love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And these four, I know the first three are really just flavors of this heart that is connected, that is open and resonant with people. So when our hearts are open, that basic open quality, that basic open connected quality is the quality of loving kindness, of metta. We're not resisting, we're not fighting, we are just open and available and connected to people. And then as that heart of openness, when we have that quality of connection, if the that heart is meeting or that heart is in connection with people who are experiencing struggle or suffering, that heart responds with the flavor of compassion, of wanting to alleviate that suffering, of kind of resonating in sympathy or in empathy with that suffering. And when the people or what that open heart is connecting with is somebody who's celebrating, is joyful about something, then the heart resonates with joy. And that's this third quality of sympathetic or empathetic joy. And then the fourth quality of upekkha or equanimity is included in these heart qualities, but it's more of the mind that can be balanced, holding all of the joys and all of the sorrows, not needing to either push away the joys because there are sorrows, or not needing to hold the sorrows at bay because they feel like they might get overwhelming. And so the quality of equanimity brings a balance to mind that can recognize, yes, there are joys and sorrows, and the heart can hold all of it. So these qualities of love, the Buddha talked about them quite a bit, but his primary instructions for opening our hearts, for freeing the mind from the ways in which it struggles, the ways in which it gets caught, was mindfulness practice. And the Eightfold Path, the teachings of wise effort, wise mindfulness, wise concentration, and including the ethical component of wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood. All of these, actually, as I started to reflect on how does it work, that there is this interweaving. There's a kind of an interweaving of these qualities of love and wisdom that when we do look at our experience, if, you know, the kind of the basic instructions with mindfulness practice to turn and look at what's happening in the moment, just what's arising in the moment. When we first do this, when we first sit down and watch our minds and start looking at what's happening, often what we see is something that's a bit challenging. However we're practicing, if we're instructed to just put our attention on the breath, what we often discover is that that's not so easy. There's all kinds of movements of mind that take us away from that simple instruction. Habits of mind that, this is boring, I want something more interesting to think about, or just something that comes up in the mind, kind of almost randomly, seemingly randomly, of something through the day that is charged, that the mind kind of orients to or gravitates to. Whatever kind of practice you're doing, this will happen. And the instructions are not to try to push it away, but really to open to it, to recognize, oh, this is what's happening right now. In the guided meditation, I encourage this quality of allowing, of, oh, this is what's happening right now. And I said, and if it doesn't feel like you can allow what's happening and you're noticing some resistance or some struggle, maybe that can be allowed. There's a sense of maybe something difficult and I don't like it. The mind can kind of step back a little bit and hold that. Oh, there's something difficult and I don't like it. That's what's happening. That can be allowed. And so this process of watching our minds, it's basically the mechanism or the way this supports our minds to begin to learn something and to begin to let go of these habits, these challenging ways that our mind relates to experience, is that, you know, in our normal way of relating, often before we learn something like a meditation practice, when something challenging comes up, a thought about the past that there's something we're struggling about, our habit or our habitual way of navigating that is to kind of like try to figure it out, to think about it, to kind of go into that feeling or that emotion and all of the thoughts around it. How can I figure out how to navigate this? And so we tend to lose our mindfulness and we, you know, so for instance, if there's something like frustration coming up, there's a frustration arising and it's about something that happened. And our belief is, and what we've learned in our lives often, is that I need to think about this. I need to figure out how to do something to fix this or change it. We don't typically learn as children, and some of us don't learn this for quite a while until we meet this practice. We don't typically think of doing something like, oh, there's frustration arising. What is it like to be a human being that's frustrated? What is that experience like? That is not what our minds want to do with that experience. They want to figure out how to solve the problem. And so this practice is asking us to turn towards the human experience of what's ever happening. Oh, frustrations arising, what's that like? Confusions arising, what's that like? And that what that does essentially is when we're engaged in frustration, frustrations arising and I gotta fix it, essentially we have got our foot on the gas pedal of that frustration. We've got our gears engaged and that mind is believing that working that frustration out is the answer to that frustration. That's essentially, we've got the gears engaged and the frustration gears are connected and spinning. So it's kind of like it's encouraging that pattern. We may come to a solution for this particular frustration, but what we have done is cultivated, we've encouraged this quality of frustration as a way to solve problems. And so we've had the gears engaged and we have just encouraged that whole pattern of, oh, if I engage with this frustration and I'll figure it out. And paradoxically, you know, what we actually end up doing some of the time is like we come to some kind of okayness. This was the way my mind worked. For some people, it works a little differently. But for my mind, what tended to happen is I would come into some situation and notice there was something in the situation that I did not like. So my mind tended to orient to things it didn't like. And it's like, oh, okay, I better figure out how to fix that. So I'd work with that, I'd figure something out, and whew, it would be fixed. And then the next thing my mind did was look around and say, oh, and what else is there? There's something else that's unpleasant. That's what I've got to fix now. And so it basically reinforced the pattern of, I need to find something unpleasant to fix in order to feel okay. And then we get a brief moment of okayness, and then it's like, okay, what do I do now? I guess I look for something else unpleasant so that I can fix that too. That's what our minds do, that kind of thing. Some people do more orient towards the pleasant. Oh, if I get that pleasant thing, then I'll be happy. And you get that pleasant thing, and there's a little bit of happiness that comes with that. But that fades because, you know, things don't last that long when it's maybe just a small thing. And then the mind starts looking for something else to want to get so that there'll be the next moment of happiness. And it's just like this kind of spinning rabbit, or not rabbit, a hamster wheel of just on that habit. And so turning with mindfulness to, well, what is it like to feel it, like, what is it like to be a human being that is noticing the things that I don't like? What is it like to be a human being that's wanting or not liking a lot? When we do that, it disengages the gears. It's a different relationship to the experience. And that process begins to reorient the mind to something different. It begins to help the mind to recognize, oh, there might be a different way to navigate my life than continually looking for things to get rid of or looking for things to have. So this is the basic, you know, the basic practice with mindfulness. And we explore this kind of allowing quality. The allowing quality is really important in order to hold these difficult emotions in the space of the disengaged gears. You know, so, oh, what is it like to be a human being experiencing this frustration? That is kind of including that allowing quality. When the mind can do that, when the mind can recognize, oh, this is what it's like to be a human being that's feeling confusion, then there's a kind of a stepped back quality in the mind, a little bit of disengagement. The gears are disengaged, and the mind is essentially okay. There's a way that the mind is allowing what's there to be there without trying to fix it, without trying to push it away, without either holding on to or trying to get rid of. And that begins to transform, begins to allow that experience of whatever it is that we're noticing to shift and change. And actually we start to notice that sometimes we experience something like frustration or aversion, and that we just hang out with it for a little while. And because it's, you know, not... because nothing in our experience is very stable or very, very long-lasting, when we're not engaged, when we don't have our foot on the gas of that, it will tend to diminish. Kind of like when we put our gears into neutral in the car, you know, it no longer is going quite so fast. It begins to kind of roll to a stop when the car's in neutral. So this begins to happen, and we start to learn something about how that pattern works. And also we start to learn something about how painful it is to be wanting or to be averse. And so the mind begins to learn about our habits of mind and begins to kind of shift its gears around them. And so this is kind of just a basic description of the mindfulness practice. And in the basic description of that, it may not sound very much like love and compassion and joy are being cultivated, because after all, what we're doing is hanging out with something difficult. And so this is the piece I wanted to explore, is what happens here? What goes on? how might it be that these qualities of love and compassion and joy come as we just turn to our difficult experience? So I think the first thing that that we can recognize, and one of the kind of the pieces that is actually a quality of love in the practice, is that allowing quality of mind. The quality of mind that is kind of saying, okay, can I be okay with what's here? That is actually a form of love. It is a form of connection to our own experience. We typically, in those kinds of situations where we're following through on frustration, we are not kind of holding that with a kind of interest and curiosity. It's like we're charging with that quality, with that frustration. We're just like jumping on the bandwagon of it and riding it. And so when we step back and explore, what is that like? What does that feel like to be having that quality? It's kind of like what we're starting to do is to allow all the parts of ourselves to be here. When we think about somebody, when we think about what it might mean for somebody to love us unconditionally, that we think of that as they will accept me as I am. They'll be okay with me as I am. And that is essentially what we're trying to do for ourselves with this practice. We are exploring the possibility of being okay with whatever is here. And a beautiful piece about this is, so whatever comes up, whether it's some kind of a real, almost violent thought or self-hatred, that's a quality I worked with a lot in my own mind, was something really jarring in the mind. When we hold it, or when we open to, can that be allowed, instead of, oh, this part of me is bad, this part of me is somehow wrong, or I'm ashamed of this part of me. That's kind of trying to push it aside or to bury it or to... It's not accepting ourselves as we are. What we are in this moment, things as they have come to be, our experience in this moment as it has arisen. It has come to be based on our conditioning, based on our history, based on how our families were, based on, even their families. I mean, some of these things get passed down generationally. And so, the way that we are is often, it's not something we've necessarily chosen. It's not been, I've decided to have self-hatred. It has been, it has been conditioned. And this, this practice of opening to it can be quite challenging, especially with some of these more deep patterns and habits. It can be kind of challenging to have the courage. This practice does take courage to open to these deep patterns and habits. And yet that very movement is essentially like what we want, what we ask for when we want somebody to love us unconditionally. And yet, it's very difficult to find somebody who can do that for us. It's hard to do it for ourselves too. But we can do it for ourselves. It is possible to do that for ourselves. And so this quality of mindfulness, of opening to what is arising here, can I hold it as a human experience? That piece of it too, that piece of wisdom of, you know, it's kind of like the this is a human experience that's expressing the understanding that this is just a conditioned experience. This is coming out of conditioning. This is coming out of my history. This is coming out of some genetics, perhaps. This is coming out of culture. It's coming out of my own past experience. And so it's kind of these many threads weaving together in this moment to create this experience. And that, it's almost like any being put in this, the same situation that I'd been put into, would be experiencing something similar. So it's not personal. It's not that I somehow made this happen. It's so many conditions that have woven together, that have participated in the creation of whatever this difficult experience is. And so that understanding, for me at least, that understanding or that reflection, and my one of my teachers suggested a kind of a bringing in the reflection of this is nature. And this is, it's like this being is nature as much as a tree is nature. And a tree grows in whatever way it grows because of the conditions that it's put in. You know, it may be in, you know, some trees up in Yosemite, they're growing out of these little crevices, and they're like little bonsai kind of trees that are growing. They have these conditions that shape them. Others grow with more soil and space, and they grow large, and they have many branches, and you know, so the conditions of how much water, how much soil, how much room for the roots, all of that affects and shapes how the tree grows. It's just the process of the growing of the tree that makes it whatever shape or whatever conditions it is. And for us too, we are shaped by our conditions. We have the equivalent of sun and soil and a space for the roots of our minds. And that shapes how we are. And so it's not, so we are nature. Whatever's arising here, whatever's arising right now, is a natural consequence of what has come before. And for me, that reflection of, oh, this is nature. Oh, this depression. This is nature. Of course this is happening. That's the other kind of way of acknowledging that I found really useful. It's like the of course recognition. Of course this is happening. These conditions are the history here. And so these reflections, of course this is happening, or this is nature, for me at least, helped to create the conditions where I could kind of relax and say, oh yeah, okay, I can allow this. I don't have to push this away. I don't have to fight with this. It can be allowed. And that place of allowing, when we touch into that, maybe even, you know, the first few times we touch into that feeling of allowing our experience, it creates a very different experience around those challenges. Sometimes it feels like it creates a little bit of space. Maybe it's just like, oh, this is okay. I can hold this. Or maybe, oh, this isn't even so bad. You know, actually, mostly what was so bad was, whoops. Mostly what was so bad was all the thoughts around it and all of the kind of turning around it. But actually what's happening here, actually this right now isn't so bad. It was my idea of where it was going to go that my mind was freaking out about. And so we can start to recognize and have a little bit of space around our challenges. And what we may not, for me at least, it was a little bit more... it wasn't so obvious that in that moment of that place where, oh, it can be allowed, it wasn't so obvious that also being cultivated there, that also what was available maybe to kind of touch into, was love and compassion. Because when the mind can hold something challenging without resistance, without repressing it, without pushing it away, that is the quality of metta, that connected quality. It's not being connected to some other person here. I mean, the metta qualities, often they are talked about as relational qualities, and I talked about them earlier as relational. The feeling of connectedness with another person, the feeling of compassion that might arise if another person was suffering. But there's equally, when we see our own experience, it's almost like we see ourselves as just a being, as a being that's experiencing something difficult. And the heart, noticing that, responds with a sense of care and connection to, oh, this is a being that's going through something hard right now. And so that open heart, the heart that can allow a difficult experience, then in experiencing or feeling that challenge, may also feel compassion. At one point, this was a journey for me to begin to open to these qualities. My mind was really oriented towards more the noticing, the challenging, and I'm being okay with it. So kind of more towards that quality of equanimity. So this is, again, another way to explore or explain or think about that allowing quality is the quality of mind that's neither pushing or pulling. So it's a mind that's balanced. It can be balanced with the experience. And that's a description of equanimity. A mind that's neither like resistant or holding on, but also not denying. Equanimity is not about indifference. It actually allows us to more fully meet some experience, more fully land with some experience. So the equanimity is that balance of mind. So that's another word that we could use for that allowing. But that equanimity, when we open to the kind of emotional tone there, it will have one of these flavors of love, of compassion, or of joy. So that was the part that was not so obvious to me in my own practice. I could orient, and the balance quality was pretty easy to feel into. It's like, yep, I can be with this. Yep, okayness, that's what I felt. But it was a while before I began to be able to turn towards, oh, actually there's a quality of softening in the heart here, a quality of connection to myself, a quality of like belonging, like I'm okay with myself. That was not as obvious for me. For some people, that's the doorway in for this practice. But for others, you know, that's not the doorway. And so I just wanted to point to how, you know, this practice of mindfulness, of this allowing, this kind of this movement towards can I allow, can I be balanced around what's happening, actually brings in and begins to cultivate this softening of the heart. But we may need to turn towards it. We may need to kind of be curious. It's like, well, okay, what's here? When the mind feels like it's okay, when the mind feels like, yeah, I can be here with this, maybe instead of the attention being so much on the this that we can be here with, step back and notice the okayness. That for me was not as obvious. My mind was oriented, okay, well, there's this self-hatred happening and I can be okay with it. So I'm going to pay attention and learn what I can learn about the self-hatred or the frustration or the aversion or whatever it was. And that's useful, actually. I mean, I learned a lot. But it took me a while to kind of learn also, oh, and there's something else going on here. Which is the okayness? That mind that is actually allowing and okay with this experience? What is that like? What is it like to be okay with the experience of frustration? What is it like to be okay with the experience of confusion? That's a little bit of stepping back, of broadening what we're noticing. This is kind of noticing the quality of the mind that's knowing the experience. There's the thing that we're noticing, and this is always the case. There's something that the attention is kind of noticing. And then there's this, the kind of the awareness that knows it. And when there is a sense of allowing and okayness that's happening, sometimes we can kind of be curious about, well, what's that? What's the awareness like right now? What is it like to be okay? And in that place, kind of stepping back into the, okay, what is it like to be okay with frustration? What is that like? That experience can have many different flavors. And some of them are the flavors of love and compassion, or even joy. There has been, you know, at times, paradoxically, there's been, you know, while watching something even as challenging as self-hatred, touching into that okayness, it's like there's this joy. It's like, wow, the mind can hold this. It doesn't have to be stuck by this. And there's a delight that comes up in the mind in recognizing the freedom of not being caught by something so challenging. Sometimes that can be what happens. There can be a kind of a joy that comes in. Sometimes it might be a compassion. At one point, there was a pretty challenging situation in my home, and it was quite a lot of work I had to navigate to take care of the situation at my home. And I was pretty tired and pretty exhausted. And one day I was like going out to the store to get something that I needed to take care of some things. And I was just like kind of noticing, you know, kind of the mind doing its thing and, you know, kind of heading into the shopping piece. And yet there's kind of something, it's like, wow, there's something going on here. What is that feeling? There's this kind of felt like a funny feeling in my heart. It's like, huh, that feels a little funny. What is that? And it's kind of like this kind of jumpy or quivery kind of quality. And I just hung out with it for a little while. And then it was just, it like hit me in the face. It was like, oh, that's compassion. That's compassion for myself. And it was not like I was feeling self-pity or kind of sorrow. It was actually, it brought tears to my eyes. It was so moving because it was almost like, oh, this being is having so much struggle right now. And there's just a natural response of compassion in the heart for me as a being experiencing suffering. That quality of self-compassion isn't kind of a reification of a sense of self. It's much more kind of just that, oh, this being, the conditions of this being, experiencing suffering right now. The heart opens to that. The heart can open to that and feel that quality of compassion. So I'll just, there's quite a bit of I could point to here. But I want to see if there's some questions, and I'll just mention a teaching, a sutta from the Buddha that kind of lays out or mentions a kind of path of practice. And it starts with the challenges, and this is a sutta in the text called the Majjhima Nikaya, the middle length discourses of the Buddha. And you know, it begins with a simile. It's called the simile of a cloth. And it begins with a simile where the Buddha talks about, you know, if there's a cloth that has a bunch of, it's been ground, dirt ground into it, it's kind of stained. And if you put that cloth that's all got all the stain in it, on it, into a vat of dye, it will take up the dye, but the dye will not be even because of the stain. So he says it'll be... poorly, it will look poorly dyed. And he said, yet if you clean the cloth first, if you scrub out the stains, then when you put that cloth into the vat of dye, it will take up the dye and it will have a pure color to it. It will look nicely dyed. And so he uses this analogy for our minds, that, you know, basically the first thing we need to do is look at our minds and see where are we caught, where is there the struggles, and the basically our reactive habits and patterns of mind come back to three basic qualities of greed, of aversion, of confusion or delusion, and these qualities produce a lot of different reactive patterns in the mind. And he says, well, this is where we start. We start by getting to know them, getting to know these qualities of mind with mindfulness. So just this process that I was describing. He said, when there is the knowing of them as struggle, as difficulty, essentially knowing them as human experience, not as something I need to do to fix it, change it, get rid of it, hold on to it, whatever it is, but just like, oh, this can be seen as a human experience. He said, with that, the mind begins to let go of those reactive patterns. And so this is not a small part of our practice, but it's a piece of our practice. And starting from there, as we begin to engage with the curiosity of looking at our own minds and the habits and patterns there, that transformation around letting go of them begins to happen. And he says, what happens then is that there's this kind of confidence that arises. Oh, I can do this. And here it's expressed in terms of the kind of classic way confidence is expressed. Confidence in the Buddha, confidence in the Dharma, confidence in the Sangha, confidence in the Buddha, the teachings of the Buddha, what he had to offer, confidence in the possibility of waking up, confidence in that this actually works, this is helpful, confidence that that there's support out there to help us. And so we gain confidence in, you know, doing this practice, we start to see some results. And so we gain confidence not only in the practices what the Buddha taught, but in our capacity to do it. And so this creates this confidence. And with that confidence, he says, then joy and delight begin to arise. Kind of what I was describing. I said, oh, wow, this is helpful. You know, that kind of place where the mind begins to see, oh, wow, a whole different way to meet experience. And I'm not so miserable anymore. Joy and delight can arise with that. And so he says, with joy and delight, the mind begins to get a little more settled, a little more calm. It gets happier, and that happiness actually creates the conditions for the mind to get really settled and concentrated. And with that, there's kind of two directions that different teachings point to here. With the mind getting settled and concentrated, sometimes the suttas say, when the mind gets settled and concentrated, it starts to be able to see things as they are. It starts to see things as impermanent, as unreliable, as not self, as basically, you know, a conditioned unfolding, not a me here in charge. And so that's one direction that the teachings sometimes go. But this particular sutta goes a different direction. It says the mind becomes concentrated. It says with that concentration, one abides in love. One abides in compassion. One abides in joy, and one abides in equanimity. And so in this case, this settling of the mind through this practice of meeting the challenges, there's this kind of the what I'm taking essentially to be the dye analogy here is that, you know, you're kind of immersed in the field of the Dharma as you're practicing in this way. And then as the mind begins to let go of those challenging and reactive mind states, it starts to take up the dye of the Dharma. It starts to take up the kind of the dye of love and compassion and joy. And it's described, the image of the dye, you know, it's like you can just drop the cloth in the vat of dye and the cloth, like, it just naturally kind of pulls in the dye. And that seems to be the image here, that this is a natural unfolding. It doesn't say, you know, after the concentration, and all of this actually, I'll read this paragraph. Having gained confidence in the Dhamma, so having that confidence come up after seeing how the practice works, having gained confidence in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, one gains inspiration in the meaning, gains inspiration in the Dhamma, gains gladness connected with the Dhamma. When one is glad, joy is born. In one who is joyful, the body becomes calm. In one whose body becomes calm, happiness comes. In one who feels happiness, the mind becomes concentrated. And so it's not described as being like, okay, you do this kind of practice around mindfulness, and then you have to work really hard to get concentrated. It sounds like this description is very much a very natural unfolding of conditions. That as the mind begins to release these reactive states of greed, aversion, and delusion, very naturally, qualities of joy, of happiness, of calm, of concentration begin to arise. And so this is the dye. It's like our system is just pulling them in very naturally. And then also the qualities of love and compassion and joy and equanimity also coming in. So it's described as a natural arising. And I think it's a natural arising just because of what this practice of allowing, of that equanimity, that holding the experience with balance of mind, that has the love, that is cultivating the love. It's cultivating that acceptance. It's cultivating that connection with ourselves. No part left out. Completely, utterly accepted for what is here in this moment. And so it's a very natural part of the arising. The other reason I think that the that these qualities are kind of naturally follow is that if we think about what greed, aversion, and confusion are, you know, they're kind of the mind tightening down, holding on to things, pushing things away, confusion, the mind kind of spinning around, not able to kind of figure things out. And as they begin to, as all of the patterns and habits of mind that are based on those begin to be seen, the gears get disengaged, they begin to unwind. It's like what happens is that greed begins to get weaker in the mind. Aversion begins to get weaker in the mind. And delusion begins to get weaker in the mind. The freedom that the Buddha points to that's possible through this practice, and sometimes termed enlightenment, sometimes said the word in Pali is Nibbana, in Sanskrit Nirvana. It's like enlightenment, that's how that's often translated. But the word itself, Nibbana, actually means something like cooling, a releasing. And the Buddha described this state or this kind of freedom as being freedom from greed, freedom from aversion, freedom from delusion. He didn't say it was the acquisition of something. And yet with the release of greed, aversion, and delusion, what seems to happen is that they're opposites, non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion, the non-arising of greed is experienced as something like generosity, of care, of a sense of you know, relatedness, a generous relationship. The non-arising of aversion is experienced as something like love. And the non-arising of confusion or delusion is experienced as something like wisdom. And so that as these qualities fall away, the natural expression of being human, non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion, is a generous-hearted, caring, loving being. Sometimes we can see this, we watch our minds, watch things transform, watch anger begin to let go, watch fear begin to let go. At one point I was exploring a pretty strong fear, and just hanging out with it, noticing it. And every now and then, the mind would almost flip into, it was a situation where I was fearful not only for myself, but for people who were also around me. And it was a situation where there was objectively, potentially something that there could have been a reason for fear, but it turned out not to have been the case. Which I began to realize after a few minutes of hanging out with this, that, oh, that thing that I anticipated or thought might happen, that's not going to happen. So the mind was kind of hovering with the fear, and every now and then it would flip to, like, the mind just like, I hope everybody's safe. I hope everybody's okay. And when it did that, it was like, oh, right, that's the expression of metta. That's the expression of love, the wish that everybody be okay. And then it would flip back to the fear. And it would be, noticing all the fear and all of the anxiety and all of the confusion around that. And then it would flip back to the, oh, I hope everybody's safe. And that experience, it's like the strength of the fear and the strength of the wishing that everyone was safe. I could tell that they were connected at the bottom somewhere. That the fear was kind of a confused response to wanting everybody to be safe. It was like a holding on to, a not okayness with the possibility that something could go wrong. It's like, things might go wrong. It's like, I didn't have control over that. And, so the mind of fear is kind of like... When we're caught in fear, when we're able to be aware of fear, it doesn't seem to have the same kind of clouding of our minds. But often when we are caught by fear, it's like we're not really able to see a situation clearly. It felt to me more like when the mind flipped out of the fear and into the experience of the wishing well for everybody, there was much more clarity of seeing. It was much more ability to recognize, if these things happen, I could do that or that, without reactivity, without a kind of a real agitated quality in the mind about it. And so I could begin to see that the kind of the fear was connected to that wish for everybody to be safe. And it was also at the same time connected to the recognition that I don't have control. I don't have control over this situation. And that was true. Trying to resist that truth that I didn't have control, that's where some of that fear came in. And so in our practice, as we start to look at whatever struggle we're having, whatever struggle is happening, there's usually some thread in that struggle that's connected to a deep wish for our own safety, our own happiness, our own well-being. And that is metta. That is that quality of love, of care, of connection. Or it's connected to the wish for safety and well-being for our families and friends. or for others around us. And so embedded in whatever struggle we're having, there are these threads of the wishing for love, wishing for safety, the wishing for well-being. So they're in there. They're just kind of tied up in knots, because there's also the truth that things are impermanent and unreliable, and we don't always have control. And the reactivity is kind of a tangle of those threads coming together. And so the experience that we're looking at, this reactivity, this fear, whatever it is, it's kind of got these threads in it of love and of truth. And in the opening to these experiences, opening to the reactivity with mindfulness, it's like the mindfulness begins to tease these threads apart. It's not like we get the scissors out and we cut this knot out, you know. That's not what happens. But it's like a slow, gentle untangling of these threads. And we begin to recognize that these things that our mind thought were incompatible, this wish for safety and this uncontrollability, this unreliability, seem inherently incompatible. That's where our mind gets tied up in knots. That seeming incompatibility does not have to be incompatible. Our heart can hold it. Hold both. Hold the seeming contradictions of that. And then what seems to happen is the mindfulness, you know, this is again, it's a kind of an image or an analogy, kind of a cloth analogy is convenient for this. You know, the cloth having all these knots in it, you know, instead of stains here, it's like knots. And the mindfulness begins to untangle those knots. And then we have a cloth that is stronger with its weave of these threads of the wish for well-being, the threads connected to love, and also the threads connected with truth, of wisdom. And so the love and the wisdom develop, and you know, the mind begins to hold and understand them both together. But we may have to kind of be curious if it feels like for me it felt like everything was on the side of like, well, okayness, but I'm not feeling much love and compassion. Kind of a turning towards, what is that like to feel okay? Maybe curiosity. Is there a sense of, you know, care in that feeling? Even kindness in that feeling? Maybe we can touch into this mindfulness as a loving awareness. Well, I did talk the whole time. No question. Sorry about that. Thank you for your attention. And if any of you would like to check in, I'm happy to stay a few minutes.